Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show, coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida, Naples, Fort Myers area, all around the country, and yes, around the world on the World Wide Web. Thanks for joining us today. We hope to have an interesting program for you today. We've got an interesting guest coming up at the bottom of this hour, I believe, a gentleman by the name of Kerwin Swint. He's the author of Mudslingers, the 25 Dirtiest Political Campaigns of All Time, and his new book out is called Dark Genius. It's about the influential career of legendary political operative and Fox News founder Roger Ailes. So you'll want to hear that. He's an adjunct professor of history at Kennesaw State University in Georgia. So we'll look forward to having him on, and we'll talk about the infamous Roger Ailes coming up at that time. Gee, lots happened since last Thursday when we got together. Of course, there's the John Edwards mess. Personally, I don't really care. When I heard it, I wasn't surprised, because when the rumors had been dancing around Washington for quite a while and I kept hearing them over and over again, I figured there must be something to it somewhere, and Mr. Edwards went ahead and admitted his indiscretions. As far as having qualities of leadership, does that keep you from having the qualities you need for leadership? No, I don't think it does. It means you made a mistake, bad mistake, but I guess the thing is, a lot of people are really PO'd at him because his wife has cancer, incurable cancer, I think. And so that made it look probably even worse. But anyway, it's not over. It could have come at a better time, I guess. The Republicans, of course, used it all day Friday. They talked about it all they could. Not all day. It didn't come out to what, late Friday? But Sean Hannity certainly had a picnic with it. I knew he would. And also, we've had this war brewing, and we'll talk quite a lot about that today, this war between Russia and Georgia. And before anybody gets all excited about that, I did wonder today just how many redneck Republicans called their local military recruiters to join up because they heard the Russians are invading Georgia. Probably a whole bunch of boys from Alabama and South Carolina and North Carolina wanted to join up, and expecting probably a lot of guys with their coon dogs and their hunting rifles at the borders now of Georgia waiting for the Russians to come charging in. But probably got barricades set up all around Atlanta and Macon and all those places. So, yes. I did actually, no kidding, talk to somebody over the weekend whom I know and who's known for not being terribly bright. Came to me and said he heard something about the Russians coming to Georgia. And he wanted to know what gives with that. And I had to tell him it was a different Georgia. So he ain't never heard of no other Georgia. Yes. People like that do really and truly exist. They really do. So we'll talk about the war a little later on after we have our guest on today, I suppose. I did see on the political scene here in this country today that Mr. Mukasey, and I have to wonder, how does Chuck Schumer and Dianne Feinstein feel right now after putting all their support behind Mukasey? I and many others warned them about confirming this man for the attorney generalship. I knew he would be a Bush lackey. I think we all knew he would be a Bush lackey. And turns out that he is. Nothing more than that. And I don't know if any of you heard his speech today, but let me just quote in a speech before the American Bar Association today. Mukasey was more explicit in his rejection of any sort of review or prosecution. And he was talking about people that Congress have wanted to possibly prosecute, but they're not going to be able to prosecute anybody for politicizing the Department of Justice. And he said the negative publicity that they faced was enough, that should be enough punishment for these people. He said, I to put it in concrete terms, I doubt that anyone in this room would want to trade places with any of those people. My. And he said, just because his predecessors in the Justice Department were breaking the law and their hiring processes doesn't mean anyone should be held accountable. Not every wrong or even every violation of the law is a crime. That's to quote the Attorney General of the United States, and I'll be damned, I didn't know that. I most certainly did not know that every crime, every violation of the law wasn't a crime. Did you know that? I thought that was the very definition, violation of the law, crime. I thought one equaled the other. So I wonder how the Democrats that capitulated on his nomination feel today. Do they feel the same way? Do they? You know, I think saying that you can violate the law and it's not a crime, and that public humiliation is enough punishment, as he has said for these people, then I suppose Al Capone and Duke Cunningham and Jack Abramoff and Scooter and John Dillinger and Pretty Boy Floyd and all those people should have just said, you know what, folks? Al Capone, he's suffered enough. He's had public humiliation in the newspapers. And yes, he did violate the law, but not every violation of the law is a crime. And folks, poor Al Capone he's been vilified enough in the press and in the media, so let that be enough punishment for them. And isn't that what the Attorney General, and I know it's stretching it, but isn't that what he's saying here? Same thing. Boys got caught outside the bank with a bag of money, and it was in the newspaper, and you know, these poor boys have been punished enough. Public opinion of them, they must feel terrible by now. God, Mukasey is such an embarrassment to the Justice Department. We knew he would be. We echoed that over and over and over again. I know many of you felt the same way. We warned them. We warned them about confirming this guy. We warned them earlier this year that no appointment of Bush should be confirmed because he doesn't have decent enough judgment to put somebody forth that ought to be confirmed. They should have taught him a political lesson. You violated the law. You've smeared it in our faces. We will not confirm anybody that you give an appointment to. We will not. And yet they went ahead and did it anyway because they didn't want to look like obstructionists. The Democrats didn't. We just don't want to look to the public, you know, make it look like the public that, gee, we're standing in the way of the President of the United States. So whomever he puts up for any job, we'll confirm them. That's basically the tact that many Democrats took. And, oh, yes, they hem-hawed around about a couple of them. They had mild protestations about some of them. But in the end, it's, okay, Mr. Bush, we'll do what you want. We don't want to look like the bad guy to the American public. Again, Mukasey, embarrassment. We knew it would be. We predicted it. We said that he would go along with anything Bush told him to do, regardless of the law, and that, so far, has been exactly the case. I don't know how many of you saw the Larry King interview with Nancy Pelosi, Pelosi embarrassment Democrat. She criticized John McCain because he called, said we ought to bring Congress back into session. For one, she was right about something. McCain, of course, has been talking about the, let's get back to work, bring the Congress back to work. They're going on vacation. They should be back to work. And she said, well, it's interesting to hear Senator McCain talk about bringing Congress back. He wasn't even in Congress when we had two very important bills on energy, and that is exactly true. We spoke about that last week. He's got the worst record as far as voting, and he's standing out that, you know, that's the pot calling the kettle black. And, of course, we've got Senator Barack Obama continuing his week-long vacation in Hawaii. He's going to be holding a fundraising event tonight in, I guess, Honolulu. And McCain's going to visit York County, Pennsylvania today to host a town hall-style meeting with Tom Ridge at his side. Do you suppose Tom Ridge is going to be his VP? Could be. Could be. He'd be a strong VP candidate, I believe. But how about Cokie Roberts? Did many of you see Cokie Roberts' interview talking about, what program was she on Sunday? I forgot. I just got to see the tape of it. Saying she didn't think it was right for him to go to Hawaii. That was a poor choice, as going someplace exotic like that. Hey, I got news for you, Cokie. That's one of the 50 states. And he's got relatives there. He's got grandma there. He's got cousins there. I believe he was born in Hawaii. And she said he should go someplace more where Joe American would go, someplace like Myrtle Beach. I thought that was a... Cokie Roberts, daughter of Hale Boggs, famous Democratic congressman, I believe from Louisiana. She's been an embarrassment. I'd hardly ever agree with her. I don't know where she got the attitude she's got today. She's turned more and more and more to the right all the time. She's been critical of all Democrats in the past few years. And for her to sit up and make a statement like that about Barack Obama, I thought was absolutely ludicrous. And I see that our good friend Mike Huckabee is going to become part of Fox News. So that means he must be good pals with our interview subject today. He must be good pals with Roger Ailes. And again, we're going to have Kerwin Swint on, Professor Kerwin Swint, who wrote the book about Roger Ailes. And that means that Huckabee must have had a visit with him or two. And just to quote an article here about this today, it said in June, former presidential candidate Mike Huckabee inked a one-year deal as a political commentator with Fox News Channel. Today, the New York Post reports that Huckabee has quietly taped a pilot in New York for a weekend cable TV show that's set to debut on Fox News Channel sometime this fall. In addition, Huckabee ruled out a post in the next administration if John McCain wins this fall. And what if John McCain wins in November? Would he take a cabinet post if offered? Why would I want to do that? Huckabee said. I'm going to have a good life out here in the private sector, he said. Why would I go back to telling everybody in the world how much money I make, barely surviving to have some obscure cabinet post and have some 20-year-old from the White House telling me what I'm going to do? Barely surviving to have a cabinet post. What do they pay? $167.5, I think it is. Somewhere in that neighborhood. Barely surviving on that, of course. Boy, they're something, aren't they? And I see the number of low-income workers living in poor neighborhoods rose in 34 of 58 metro areas. 34 out of the 58 metro areas, mostly in the Northeast and Midwest. That's in the years between 1999 and 2005. Yes, the poor are getting poorer. Workers are working longer for less pay. And some of our cities are becoming in pretty doggone bad shape. And that's particularly galling when you hear the report out today from the GAO, it's the Government Accounting Office, reporting they found that two-thirds of U.S. corporations paid no federal income taxes between 1998 and 2005. And they said about 68% of foreign companies doing business in the U.S. avoided corporate taxes over the same period. Does that not make you wonder who's paying the bills? You have the Republicans. You have your John McCain type standing in front of the American public and saying, I'll lower your taxes. I'm going to lower taxes. My tax plan includes slashing the corporate tax, reducing the estate tax, and giving companies a deduction on new equipment. Those are quotes from John McCain. I've got 27 years experience. My tax plan includes slashing the corporate tax, reducing the estate tax, and giving companies a deduction on new equipment. Well, John, you see, what's that going to do? Give them money back? He's going to give them tax credits. He's going to put cash in their pocket. Not only do they not pay any taxes, you're going to give them credit on all that, and they'll end up making money just off the tax system. Poor Joe and Sally have money taken out of their paychecks every single week to pay their taxes. Or the small businessman down the street pays his quarterly taxes. They're going to pay their taxes. But not the big corporations. No, not the big corporations. Two-thirds of U.S. corporations paid no federal income taxes between 98 and 2005. Now that's just, it's wrong. It's simply wrong. I don't know how anybody can justify that. Have they created a bunch of new jobs? No. Have many of them that paid no taxes in this country shipped many, many jobs overseas? Yes. Hell yes, they have. Many of these companies who paid no taxes have shipped jobs overseas, making money off of the jobs overseas. Ask General Motors if they're making any profit in China. Ask Coca-Cola if they're making any profit in China. I don't begrudge anybody making a profit, unless it's obscene profits like the oil companies. But you have General Motors playing the po' boy here in the U.S., and they're making a lot of money in China. It just doesn't make any sense to me. It doesn't make any sense why corporations get away without paying any taxes. It's very frustrating, and I know it's frustrating to you as well. I've heard from a lot of people today. Speaking of frustrating, have you done any flying lately? Been on a plane lately? It's getting to be quite an experience. I know I mentioned to you about my last trip. I went up to Chicago several weeks ago, and the trip back was a nightmare and a half. And it's just getting worse and worse. Since I mentioned that, I've heard from so many of you, and I've also heard from friends and relatives about trips to the airport they've had lately. And now I saw a story today that the stores and the airports are cashing in because the passengers, hopeful passengers on planes, are having to spend more time in the airports on account of their delays. You know, you spend $3 for some water, $1.50 for a candy bar. You pay sky-high prices for substandard food in most of the cases. Not all, but most cases it's substandard food and sky-high in price. And they're taking advantage of passengers' troubles. And because the airlines are run so shoddily nowadays, I don't know if that's a word, shoddily, maybe shabbily. I don't know. But I see they're going to begin putting ads. And, man, I hate this. They're going to begin putting ads on your pull-down tray tables and the seat backs in front of you. That's right. They're going to put ads on your pull-down trays and the seat backs in front of you. You're strapped in a seat. You can't get away from them. They're even going to put ads on your boarding passes. Those of you that print out boarding passes, or maybe you get them at the gate, they're going to put ads on them now, print ads. And I was thinking that maybe they could rename some of the planes, like they renamed some of the stadiums and put a sponsor's name on it. Welcome aboard the Boeing Burger King 737. Have it your way. Something like that. But we all better get used to the fact there are going to be far fewer flights. There's going to be higher and higher prices. And there's going to be more and more and longer delays. So that's something that we all need to get used to. It's coming. It's here now. It's not going to go away anytime soon. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the program. If I seem a bit sluggish today, I don't know if sluggish is the right word. I'm a little bit out of sync. We reorganized the studio over the weekend in some spare time and place some equipment in different places than it used to be, try something to make it even more handy. And I'm not sure I'm exactly used to it yet. I'm not sure I'm very comfortable with it yet, but it should work out okay. So if I push a wrong button or that today, you'll perhaps understand why. I see Joe Lieberman, John McCain's shadow. He's really into it, really into the campaign of John McCain. And he's trying to see if he can buy back his chairmanship. He's faced with an increasing likelihood of losing his Homeland Security and Public Works Committee chairmanship after the elections because so many Democrats are pissed at him for the way he's acted, for kissing McCain's behind all the time. So what's he do? He writes a $100,000 check to the Democratic senatorial campaign. Yes. And he's written that's last year. And this year, he's written a second $100,000 check to DSCC Chairman Chuck Schumer in just in recent days, according to people familiar with the situation. So Joe, thinking that he's going to be kicked out, and rightly so, kicked out of his chairmanship of the Public Works and Homeland Security committees, he's trying to buy it back. And you know what? I'll bet he gets it done. I'll bet he does get it bought back. But have you ever seen anything more sickening than Joe Lieberman pandering to John McCain, following him? He's over him and Lindsey Graham over McCain's shoulder, no matter where you see him. Those two clowns are right behind him all the time. And I suppose if he gets up and speaks at the Democratic National, or the Republican National Committee, he'll probably have to fork over some more dough. But you know how it is in the United States Senate. It's, well, you know, he's one of us. He's one of us. And we're going to play you some audio by Joe Lieberman a little bit later. about his association with Mr. Pastor Hagee. Is it Hagee or Hagee? I think it's Hagee. Have you ever seen that clown Hagee on TV? I didn't know it, but he's got a son that looks just like him. I happened to be flipping channels the other night, and there's Junior Hagee, or whatever his name is no question, is this idiot Hagee's son. Sounds exactly like him, preaches with that same southern cadence, the same message. I was shocked. I didn't know he had a son. How many of these guys do this? We had Billy Graham doing it. We had Osteen doing it. Lots of them do it. They just, hey, I know I'm the preacher in this church, and I'm going to give up now. I know who else. Falwell. Yeah, Falwell. Roberts. Oral Roberts. Pat Robertson. All have their little boys take up where they left off. Now, isn't that just precious? Doesn't it just make you feel oh so fine? I don't know. But I saw this Hagee kid up there preaching, and I just, it was eerie how much he sounded like the old man. Really, really very much so. And speaking of eerie, like I said, we've got some audio we're going to play a little later on, perhaps you haven't heard yet, by Hagee and by Joe Lieberman. When you hear it, it makes you want to take a shower afterwards. It's really something. Well, we're going to see, we've got a guest coming up at the bottom of the hour, and I think we'll go ahead and get started on that. We'll go to a break, and we'll be back in just a couple minutes, so don't go anywhere.
We're voting Republican because we don't like shopping at small neighborhood stores.
We don't want the problem of choosing where to shop.
And we just love cheap plastic crap from China.
I'm voting Republican because I don't really want a cure for AIDS or breast cancer. They're just gays and women.
I'm voting Republican because I think new drugs should be made available immediately, whether they've been tested properly or not. If the major pharmaceutical companies' bottom lines are healthy, then I feel healthy too.
Bye-bye, baby. Have a good day. Yeah.
I'm voting Republican so that my little Caitlin can be in the classroom with at least 30 other children. That way, she can be challenged by fighting for attention.
I'm voting Republican because women just can't be trusted to make decisions about their own bodies. Never, ever, ever.
I'm voting Republican because I've already seen the great outdoors. Continuing our use of fossil fuels freely is far more important than preserving our natural wildlands.
We're voting Republican because we like a conservative majority on the Supreme Court.
We really like knowing that even if we're separate, we'll still be called equal.
I'm voting Republican because I need to be told who I can love.
I told you.
Honey, I need the government to tell me.
I just need them to tell me how I can best show a lifetime commitment.
And Republicans are just the folks to do that, sweetheart.
I'm voting Republican because corporations should not have to pay to clean up environmental damage. The EPA is an outmoded idea. If people want clean water, buy it in a bottle.
I'm voting Republican because I don't want to know if the food I'm eating has been genetically modified or exposed to radiation. I don't want to have to live with that fear, you know? So, if the label says it's food, that's good enough for me.
I'm voting Republican because
I really enjoy being screwed by the utility company.
We need more minorities in prison.
Because hybrid cars really suck.
I just don't feel I deserve health insurance.
Because Texas needs more billionaires.
I'm voting Republican because sometimes the Constitution is just one big inconvenient headache.
I think the whole world should be run by one big corporation. I think it'd be so much cozier.
Because all other countries are inferior to us.
And we should start as many wars as we need to keep it that way.
So I can stay in Iraq.
So I can go to Iran.
So if you were thinking about voting something besides Republican, don't bother. Stay home. We've got it all taken care of. You'll get exactly what you deserve.
Yeah.
And welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Guy James Show. Thank you so much for joining us today. And as promised, we have Professor Kerwin Swint on the line right now. He's Associate Professor of Political Science at Kennesaw State University, a former campaign consultant and political commentator for local and national media. And he wrote one very terrific book called Mudslingers, the 25 Dirtiest Political Campaigns of All Time, and now another one of particular interest to me called Dark Genius, the Influential Career of Legendary Political Operative and Fox News Founder Roger Ailes. Professor, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you on to talk about somebody whom I think is one of the more fascinating characters in political history in this country.
You bet. He's quite a guy. He's accomplished a lot in his career that a lot of people don't know about.
He has, and such an unusual man is Roger Ailes. I hear people all the time, and I'm guilty of it myself. We talk about kingmakers like Karl Rove, for example, but I really believe that Roger Ailes, over his career, has been every bit as influential, perhaps more, than Karl Rove. What do you think?
Well, you know, it's amazing. What first got me really interested in a book on Roger Ailes was this debate that you see sometimes in the media over whether Fox News is biased or not. And, you know, the more you look at it, the more you come away convinced that, of course, it's biased. You know, of course, it's a conservative network. And I started looking into Ailes' background. And, of course, he was a Republican consultant for years in a lot of high-profile races, both in Congress and, of course, a couple of presidential races. And so you put all that together, you put all the pieces together of the puzzle, and, you know, there's no question that Fox News is a conservative operation, largely serving conservative political interests.
And it might surprise a lot of people to know that it wasn't and probably isn't necessarily politics that Ailes is so superb at. He's more of a P.T. Barnum, a showman guy, isn't he?
Well, he really is. He's a bit of a Renaissance man in that he has a lot of different interests. All of them revolve around communication, of course, and performance. He really loves television. He loves live TV in particular. And, of course, he got his start right out of college with the old Mike Douglas show up in Ohio, which was just a local talk show at the time. Took it national, was very successful with it, won a couple of Emmys. And that's where he met Richard Nixon, which took him into a whole different trajectory, where he became a political TV expert over the next quarter century.
And, of course, as some of our junior members of our audience may not know, there isn't anybody who needed more help with how to act on TV than Richard Nixon when he first started out.
What he did for Nixon is really kind of a miracle, because at the time Nixon's image was so cold and dark. You know, he was most known for that terrible debate performance on TV with John Kennedy in 1960. And he knew that he needed to conquer television if he was going to really have a shot at the presidency. And that's where Roger Ailes really helped him. Ailes was an expert, and is an expert, at making people look good on TV. He knows how to stage them, how to light them, how to coax the best performance out of them. And he managed to do that with Nixon in a series of TV programs called the Man in the Arena shows. And it went a long way in helping Nixon's ad men recast Nixon. It was like a product relaunch.
Oh, it was. And Nixon did in fact come out of it a completely different product than he was during those debates, at least his appearance on TV. I do remember that many folks listening on the radio actually thought Nixon won the debates, but he frankly, to be honest with everybody, especially the one with the overgrown beard and all that night, he looked like a thug. Ailes would never have allowed that, and so Ailes acutely aware how somebody should look and how they should act and what they should say on TV.
Right. In 1960, TV was completely new to Nixon. He didn't know what to do with it, and no one had sat him down and taught him how to use it, which is what Roger Ailes did, which is what he's really good at, is working individually with TV anchors, political candidates, and really showing them the ropes of how to use TV.
Has there ever been another character in TV? I guess what I mean by that is there any ever been anybody else that has such an actual out in the open, in your face political bias as Fox does. I mean, he's the boss of this supposed news channel.
Yeah.
And the gall, actually, how did they, the hubris that they thought they could just start doing this in your face and have gotten away with it and had terrific ratings?
Yeah, well, I can't think of another media figure of his type who has been so associated with partisan politics, you know, who's in charge of a major news network. You know, the hubris, as you mentioned, it's part of a marketing ploy or a branding, you know, that they do in business, of where he and Rupert Murdoch knew that there was a market for a more conservative newscast, but it was important to cast it as something that's in the middle. And so they started off by saying that, you know, the others are too far over on the left. They're all liberals, you know, Dan Rather and the whole bunch. We're going to be in the middle. And, of course, they had no such intention of being in the middle, but that's how they set it in motion, and that's how they launched the product. You know, I call it a product. And that's how they continue to defend it and say, no, 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 we're in the middle. It's the other guys who are biased.
Was it so much genius that got them to where they're at? Is it been in a combination of luck? Because I believe, I'm not sure where I read it in the book or where I read it, but in the last election that Bush, according to Fox viewers, Bush outnumbered him something like 88 to 7%, something like that. And I mean, that's a remarkable number.
Oh, it is. Yeah. Well, the market for Fox News, the viewers for Fox News, are largely the people who tune into talk radio. Talk radio actually was very beneficial to Fox News, because it was, in a sense, a ready-made audience, and the base of Fox News viewership is built heavily on talk radio, moderate to conservative, middle-aged males primarily. And the market was there. You know, a lot of people, you know, the conservatives' gripe for years was that they didn't get a fair shake in the media. You know, the media was against them, they were too liberal. And Fox News came along with a product that catered to their interests and their perspective, and they really took a shine to it. So it's, you know, from that standpoint, it's been very successful because they're the only game in town.
And of course, he'd had some pretty a good relationship right before that took him a long ways toward gathering that type of an audience as well, being associated with Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, he's one of these people who really saw the appeal of talk radio. And he took that appeal. You know, this is another part of their success at Fox News, is that one way Fox News is different from the others is there's a real focus on, you mentioned P.T. Barnum earlier, but a real focus on entertainment, entertainment values. He brought on board early on a guy he worked with at the Mike Douglas Show, you know, who was there to teach these people how to do great TV, not necessarily great news, but great TV. And, you know, you look at the roster of people in Fox News, and there are a lot of people there who were formerly on what we would call tabloid television, you know, starting with Bill O'Reilly,
mm-hmm.
But others, you know, Shepard Smith and some of the correspondents there. He brought those people on board because they knew how to perform on live TV. And that's part of what he throws in there with this mix of a talk radio style with a entertainment focus. That's really a discussion about the news more than it's just news gathering.
And Ailes himself, having been associated with Current Affair and Inside Edition, right?
Yeah, he did some consulting in the early 90s. That's where he first met Rupert Murdoch. He was consulting for programs like A Current Affair and Inside Edition. That's where he came across some of these people that he later brought to New York with him.
And he's known all along, evidently, the right people to associate with. If you would, for our audience, explain his relationship and maybe a little bit about the actual man himself, Joe Coors.
Yeah. Well, you know, that for me is part of the smoking gun here about Fox News being as much a partisan political organization as a news organization, because, you know, we've seen this movie before. Roger Ailes has been involved in a right-wing effort to have a news program before, back in the 70s, Joe Coors, who of course is a prolific giver to right-wing organizations. He helped start the Heritage Foundation, for example, funded this news service called Television News Inc., TVN, which was one of these groups that Coors was supporting to try to push the country towards the political right, along with the Heritage Foundation and the Free Congress Foundation and others. And Roger Ailes was the news director in 1974, 1975 for TVN. And it was there, I believe, and I talk about it in the book, that he picked up some of these news-gathering tactics and managerial practices that we see today at Fox News, you know, such as pushing the reporters, pushing the correspondents to have a political outlook, to have a bias in their reporting. You know, that's something that you don't really see coming from the management at other news organizations, but you see it at Fox. And TVN is a big part of this, 25, 30, 40-year trajectory that Roger Ailes has been on.
Tell me, what do you know about Ailes' actual political ideology, being the showman that he is and being interested in that particular end of it? And let's face it, he's been highly successful at it. I've always said on this program that I believe that Rush Limbaugh, if the money were right, would switch sides and be something else if he needed to. I don't think Hannity would, but I think there are others that do what they do for the money. And Ailes, is Ailes a hardcore conservative, or does he really not care? He's just doing the showbiz thing that he wants to be and has been so successful at.
In the beginning, when he was young, I don't think he really did care. He was in it for, you know, the excitement of television. He had a vision for what TV could be. Over the years, though, he's worked for all of these Republican stalwarts, and I believe that he has become an integral part of the right-wing movement over the last 20 to 30 years. He likes to say he's not that political, or he's never been that political. But if you look at the company he's been around, if you look at the policies he has helped to support, you know, he's part and parcel of the whole group. Now, Rupert Murdoch is a little different. You know, he's libertarian, he's conservative, but business comes first, profits come first. And so he'll deal, you know, with China, for example. He'll deal with a Barack Obama, for example, you know, if it means, you know, furthering his profits. But that's just business. And Fox News, in the final analysis, is a business.
Yes. Yes. And a very successful business.
Very successful.
I understand some of the ratings are waning a bit now, but I think, MSNBC is gaining on them a little bit, and they have surpassed CNN, but it's waning. Many people think perhaps the right-wing neocon gig is about over for now. I think politically it may be for a while, but I don't know about these news outlets and these talkers. I think they'll remain popular. What do you think?
Well, I think they've got a challenge right now. The numbers are a little flat for Fox News over the last year or so, and that's because their viewership, which is primarily Republicans and conservatives, is a little depressed right now because of, you know, the National Republican Party's problems. But they'll battle out of it through, you know, like a focus on entertainment, a focus on performance. They'll do what they have to do to scramble and get their numbers back up. And they'll wait for the cycle to come back around where the Republicans are in better shape.
Well, I think you wrote someplace in your book that the biggest problem with Roger Ailes is that he takes us all for fools.
Right.
Explain what you mean by that.
What I mean by that is their continuing insistence that Fox News is not biased in any way, you know, that it's just straight down the middle political news when, you know, all you have to do is look at it for 48 hours to realize that's a bunch of hogwash. You know, and some people have asked me, well, why don't they just come out and admit that they're biased, that they're conservative news? You know, it's because they would be betraying their marketing position, their marketing strategy. And so all of the things that Roger Ailes has helped sell us for years, beginning with Nixon, he must think we're fools.
He must, and yet when you talk to the devout Fox News listeners who we have found over the years when they're being polled are the most misinformed.
Mm-hmm.
There have been many polls. The Quinnipiac and other polls show that they're the most misinformed of all the network people. You get a ferocious argument when you tell any of them that Fox is biased. What are you talking about? It's the only place you can get the truth. And so I guess they've tapped into an audience there that stands with them arm in arm.
Absolutely. I mean, the audience is primarily willing accomplices. You know, they're not people necessarily being hoodwinked. But they're people that agree with it already. And so they see it as middle of the road because they're over on the right themselves for the most part.
God help us if that's middle of the road. Wow. What? I know some perfectly intelligent people that listen to Fox and it's gospel to them. I mean, they're intelligent people. And I shake my head. What is it? What's the magic of Fox here that they've done to people? I just don't get it.
The magic of Fox is that he has tapped into a market that was hungry for a conservative news product, and he has been faithful to that market, and he has come upon a formula of entertainment-driven talking heads that give, you know, the viewers that every night with a smile, and they're lapping it up. They're eager to get it every night, every day.
Mm. Well, it's just remarkable to me. It really is.
What's amazing is that he's been able to defend it as a legitimate news source and intimidate other news organizations and correspondents and reporters at other outlets. That keeps them from too much criticism.
Do you think that those of us, and by us I mean myself and my listeners, who I know are unabashed liberals, and I claim to be a Democratic liberal, do you think that we obsess too much with Fox News and Roger Ailes?
I think you obsess just the right amount, because you know they are a factor. They are a factor. I mean, they are unlike any other news outlet, because they are working for the Republican Party, conservative political issues, and they have a big audience, and they matter. They have influence. So, no, I don't think it's too much obsession, not at all.
I'm trying to think who it was recently from Fox that was having an interview with Junior Bush, George Bush, and Father Bush chimed in, say hello to our good friend Roger.
Yeah. He is a good friend.
Our guy Roger, and he is their guy. There isn't any question about
sure.
that. But I thought it was one of those awkward moments where Junior Bush probably, hey, don't say that. Don't say that on the air.
Well, the White House loves Fox News. They'll slip up every once in a while, and you'll hear it say something like that.
Oh, they certainly parrot the talking points all they need
Absolutely.
Why did you get involved in this in the first place, to write this book about Roger Ailes?
I just thought he was a great character, and nobody had written a book about him yet. He's been so influential for so long. He's an under-recognized figure in American political history, I believe. You know, I compare him to Forrest Gump in the book. You know, he's been involved in so many of our big political media moments. And I thought he deserved a book. I mean, he's a great character study. And he's being inducted into the Broadcasting Hall of Fame.
Well,
for heaven's sake.
He deserves it. I mean, he really does. As much as I hate what he does,
sure.
I have to give him credit for how he does it.
He's probably the best TV mind in the last 50 years.
And as I often say, I despise what Limbaugh stands for, but he's the king.
He's very good at it.
He's great at it. And you've described Ailes as the Muhammad Ali of political TV. I wonder who you think the George Foreman is.
Oh, boy, the George Foreman. Yeah, that's a good question. That sounds like another book right there. You have to go out and find the George Foreman.
I can't think of anybody that comes close. I think Ailes is up there completely by himself. Maybe a James Carville, but he's way down on the ladder compared to a Roger Ailes.
Right.
If I could ask you a couple of questions about your last book before this one. And by the way, we are talking to Kerwin Swint, author of Dark Genius. It's a great book on Roger Ailes, and you all know Roger Ailes, head of Fox News right now. But he also had a book, Mudslingers, The 25 Dirtiest Political Campaigns of All Time. And there have been some Lulus. Which one did you consider to be the absolute worst?
To me, the top of the list was the George Wallace campaign for governor in 1970. This is when he was fighting to retake the governor's mansion from the incumbent governor, Al Brewer, another Democrat. And so this was in the primary that they were fighting it out. And Wallace ran one of the most racist, one of the most personally vicious campaigns that I've ever seen. The Ku Klux Klan was involved. I mean, they attacked Al Brewer's family, his children. Dirty tricks were involved. I mean, it was amazing. And I put it number one because although it happened in 1970, it's a campaign that could have happened in 1870. And so I put it number one. Number two was one that a lot of historians think is the most negative ever, and that is the 1828 campaign between Andrew Jackson and John Quincy Adams. where they did everything but, you know, take out hatchets and go at it, you know, in the middle of the street.
No love lost between those.
No love lost.
Can I give you a quick story about George Wallace?
Sure.
I'm a freshman at Ohio State University, and George Wallace comes to town, and he's appearing at Mershon Auditorium, which is the big auditorium there on High Street, and it holds, I don't know, maybe 6,000. And so I lived a block from there, and he decided to go see George Wallace. And I went over, and I was sitting in about the 20th row, I would say, center. And it didn't take long for me to realize that I was one of maybe a dozen white folks in the audience.
Wow.
And I'm from a little white-only rural area, had never been around a lot of ethnic people of any kind, but I wasn't uncomfortable with that. But I did notice that that was the makeup of the audience. And so George Wallace walks out on the stage, and I have never seen anything like I saw that night. The crowd went crazy, booing him and yelling at him, and he stood there and looked and looked and looked, and he had patrolmen with him to protect him and all that. Nobody tried to go on stage or hurt him or anything
right.
like that. And he stood for perhaps 10 minutes of that with a stone face.
Yeah.
And when it finally quieted down, he raised his hands, and as God is my witness, he said, "I don't know why you want to treat me this way. I have never done anything to you niggers."
God, what a great story.
And walked off the stage. And I sat there, and of course the audience started right up again. I sat there absolutely stunned. I couldn't yell. I was so stunned that a man would do that. But that was George Wallace.
That's how he saw the world, unfortunately, and that's how he went at everything in his life. And he was brutally honest with people in 1970. He campaigned like that on the stump. You know, he would talk like that, and was very unapologetic.
Do you think he was really repentant at the end?
Well, I think he got into the open racism because it benefited him politically. You know, I don't know if in his heart of hearts he just really, really hated black people with a passion. But it helped him politically, certainly, in the 1960s at the time. And I think later on there might have been, you know, some political benefit into altering his public perceptions.
Well, I hope that it was politics. Not that I would admire that, but
right.
I would hope that it wasn't that much hate in a person's heart, because
right.
it's hard to understand that kind of hate.
Sure.
Professor Swint, we could talk all day, and I'm afraid we can't, but I would like to reserve the right to have you back on some of these days and talk some more about this.
Sure.
It's a great read, the new book. I wish you much success with it. Again, it's Dark Genius, The Influential Career of Legendary Political Operative and Fox News Founder Roger Ailes. Folks, I know a lot of my audience, I know you don't like Roger Ailes. But you know the old story, keep your friends close, keep your enemies closer. And Professor Swint, you've done a terrific job with this book, and I wish you much success, and I thank you for being on the program today.
Thank you very much, Guy.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
This is a fascinating book. You know what? I know you trust me by now with books. When I interview somebody and I tell them it's a great book, it's because that I've really studied the book, and I really consider it to be a really good book worth reading. Or I tell you what, I've got what I call my 50-page rule, and I think I may have mentioned this before. I'm a fast reader, and I'll look through 50 pages of a book, and if 50 pages it doesn't grab me and pull me right into it, that's enough for me. I'm same way with movies. I got a 30-minute rule with movies. I watch a movie, and if in 30 minutes it doesn't grab me, bingo, I'm up. You can ask my wife and my friends about that. I'm up and I'm doing something else. I'm just not going to waste any more time. But this book is a dandy. And Roger Ailes, love him or hate him, and I know how most of you feel. I know most of you feel exactly the same way I do about him. But he is a dark genius. He has performed miracles with rehabilitating Richard Nixon and helping get Junior Bush elected and getting Rush Limbaugh going, becoming so popular, and then Fox News. And so we do have to respect that. I don't like how he's done it in many ways, and I don't like the man at all. But it is a fascinating story. So it's a terrific book. Dark Genius, and it's available just everywhere. It's from Union Square Press, and I think if you like a good read, it's an easy read. It's in layman's terms. You'll enjoy it. Speaking of books, we got a couple of more from publishers today that they want to have somebody on. We're going to have Sidney Blumenthal on again, and we're going to have him on. I think we've got that scheduled for, I think it's the 21st. Is it the 21st? I think that's when it is, anyway. Sidney's got two new books out, The Strange Death of Republican America, and another one called The Rise of the Counter-Establishment, The Conservative Ascent to Political Power. So Sidney chronicles the rise of Republican power and the fall, the collapse of the Republican Party, and they sent these as a set. That's from Union Square Press as well, so we've got a lot of reading to do on those before we get Sidney Blumenthal on the program, and I do believe, again, that's coming up the 21st. From the Small Business Alliance, we've got Chris Gunn coming up on Thursday to talk about this problem of corporations paying no income tax, that you and I are the ones shouldering all the bills in this country while the corporations make off with fortunes in many, many cases. A lot of Americans very, very resentful of that. I see the stock market today is currently down 141 points, and oil is down another $1.44. It seems that the even though the Georgia thing, and we're going to talk about that in the second hour today, and talk about some of the geography of it and some of the reasons for the Georgia-Russia problem and Ossetia, it seems it hasn't really affected the price of oil at all. One would think, from all that we've seen in the past, when there's some sort of a threat to the oil supply anywhere, any of the pipelines, no matter where they may be talking, it always affects the price of oil and sends it up. This one hasn't affected the price of oil at all. So a bit hard to understand. It's a very, very complicated issue, the Russian and Georgia conflict. Very complicated. And, of course, Uncle Sam has his fingerprints all over it as well. So you'll want to talk about that. Did you know that the president of Georgia is a New York lawyer? Really, I'm not kidding. Educated in the United States, had law practice, got powerful friends in Washington, and went and became the president of Georgia. Mm-hmm. So keep that in mind. But this war, conflict, whatever you want to call it going on over there, has got implications once again. Fingerprints on it from Uncle Sam. Dick Cheney's fingerprints all over it. All over it. Show me a conflict in the world about oil, and that's what this is about when it finally comes down to the bottom line. Show me one that doesn't have Dick Cheney's fingerprints all over it, and I'll sell you some swamp land in Florida. 866-546-5254, but hold off on the calls until the second hour. We'll be back right after the news, and we'll talk some more about John McCain, about the Russian problem, about the Georgian problem, about the Ossetia problem, all of that, the oil problem, and maybe you can join in on the conversation as well. I hope you will. So don't go away. I guess we still do have about a minute before the top of the hour. I see the Kaplan family, the Freddie Kaplan family, and all his relatives there, and the usual suspects, Bill Kristol and Charles Krauthammer and all of them, calling for a conflict with Russia. Can you believe we have people in this country that would do that? Can you actually believe there are people in this country, knowing that we're involved in two wars right now, wanting to get into a third one in Iran, really think we ought to do something militarily about this Russia-Georgia conflict? Can you believe that there are people that crazy in this country with positions of respect to the neocons? Yes, the neocons respect the Kagans. They respect the Bill Kristols. They respect Charles Krauthammer and the Fox News people. It's hard for me to understand that any thinking person could go along with any of that, but they do. Well, anyway, we're going to pause for news coming up in just a moment, and we'll be back right afterwards. I expect you'll be here, too.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The Society of Professional Engineering Employees in Aerospace wants to make sure that Boeing isn't using its employee pension fund for executive pensions. So SPIA is requesting that Boeing reveal the extent and funding source of its executive pension plans. SPIA spokesman Bill Dugovich.
U.S. corporations are moving their executive pensions into their regular employee pension funds to take advantage of tax breaks. Of course, we're very concerned that this may be happening at the Boeing Company, and we and employees need to know if it is indeed happening.
Dugovich says that Boeing has indicated it will try to do away with traditional pensions in upcoming talks and replace them with 401ks. Dugovich says workers are much better off with traditional pensions.
Pensions will be an issue in our upcoming talks with the Boeing Company. Management has already indicated that they would like to do away with the traditional pension plan. If indeed they were successful in doing away with that, it would be a major takeaway for employees. And our union has already made it very clear that we will not stand for the traditional pension going away.
As newspapers struggle to stay afloat in a changing media environment, one union has agreed to forego raises in order to preserve jobs. Jesse Russell reports.
Drivers for Philadelphia's two largest newspapers voted overwhelmingly on Sunday to pass on a $25 a week pay raise in an attempt to help the papers cut costs as revenue declines. Both the Philadelphia Inquirer and the Daily News are owned by Philadelphia Media Holdings. The workers are represented by Teamsters Local 628, and they voted 193-7 to pass on the wage increase that was scheduled to start on September 1st. Before the contract amendment can go into effect, 11 other unions must vote in favor.
Pilots for United Airlines have targeted the company's CEO by calling for his resignation. Union President Steve Welch said in the Wall Street Journal that United has gone from being the finest airline in the world with the best route structure and safety record to a shell of its former self under CEO Glenn Tilton. The union has said the airline is allowing maintenance standards to deteriorate after four recent incidents of engine failure. The company has refused to reopen contract negotiations with pilots and plans to cut nearly 1,000 pilot jobs. Jesse Russell has today's economic report.
Banks made it more difficult to borrow money during the last 3 months. According to numbers from the Federal Reserve, the rise in defaults on home loans have led to nervous banks and tougher credit standards. 75% of U.S. banks implemented tighter standards during the last 3 months. That's a 15% increase over the previous survey.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Thanks for lending an ear.
Every vet respects John McCain's war record. It's his record in the Senate that I have a problem with. He wants us to keep spending $10 billion a month in Iraq, just like Bush. That's money we could use to build schools and roads and create needed jobs here at home. He even took sides with Bush against increasing health care benefits for veterans. People should let John McCain know. His agenda is not what we need. Not now.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, give me! Give my creation! Fly!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. Six. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Ah, welcome back to the program. I'm just sitting here reading some email we got in. Ah, yes. People talking about big business here. Yes, big business. Been keeping track of a business deal going on up north, and here we have a comment about it. Good, good, good. Okay. And here's one from Ralph. Ralph, one of our conservative listeners, says, as usual, you're full of crap, but I enjoy listening to the show. Do you get that? Do any of you get that? I really don't. That's funny. It's funny. Anyway. Thanks for listening, Ralph. Glad to have you along with us today, whether you think we're full of crap or not. I don't think we are. I think we're absolutely on the money on everything we say in this program. That's right. Who could possibly know any more than we do? Huh? Well, maybe John McCain. No, not John McCain. Have you noticed, and I was listening to the news, and damn, isn't it hard listening to the news nowadays? Isn't it really difficult? You hear, here in where I live, over the weekend, on Sunday, they had an article, front page, talking about the 10 biggest foreclosures around here. I don't know if they're necessarily the 10 biggest, but 10 notable foreclosures here of homes. And I couldn't believe they had pictures of all the homes. They had the owner's names that are being foreclosed. They had how much is owed, how much in the tank people are on these homes and all. And we're talking about millions of dollars, and this was just on 10 properties. One house, I think it was, I don't know, they owed $3.1 million and is only worth $1.5 million or so. I mean, Washington Mutual, IndyMac, four out of these top 10 homes. Was it three? Was it four? Three or four of the top 10 homes are there. Again, I shouldn't say top 10. Three or four of these million-dollar homes are really expensive homes around here, financed by Washington Mutual. Now, if that's just here in this little itty-bitty area of Fort Myers, Florida, which is not itty-bitty, but still nothing compared to the rest of the country, how many do they have all around the country? So it is starting to reach into your jumbo loans. Your what is it? Jumbo loans considered what? $417,000 or above, something like that. Don't quote me on that, but it's around that area. I think 417 is considered a jumbo loan. And I see now they're charging more for jumbo loans than they did before. There was a time here when the bubble was going on when you could get a jumbo loan around here for a percent lower than the poor folks had to pay. Wasn't that a fine idea? And it just gripes my behind when I see on the news that the banks are tightening up and nobody can get any credit now without big borrowing and getting down on their knees and kissing the bankers' asses. You can't get credit. The average guy can't go to the bank to start a small business nowadays. The average guy can't go to the bank and buy a home with a decent down payment and a good job and a great credit record. Why? Why? Because all these big banks are getting hurt so bad by... A lot of them by big foreclosures, a lot of them by rich folks. And yes, a lot of other foreclosures as well. But the guy that's gone along and paid his mortgage all these years, the guy that's got sterling credit, that's done what it is he needs to do to have good credit, he's getting punished as well. Meanwhile, we have John McCain and his ilk and his surrogates out talking about Barack Obama, the elitist. Barack Obama, the elitist. Now, I have seen pictures of Barack Obama's home. It's a nice home. It's an old home, probably very nice inside. I don't know what it's worth. I don't know. Certainly not what anybody would call a mansion by any stretch of the imagination. But here we have the McCain folks calling Barack Obama an elitist, and McCain has 8 or 9 houses. They're not exactly sure. Pictures I found on TV or on the internet of the one that he's got for sale where they entertained his journalist pals out in Phoenix. The barbecue area is bigger than my house. And then the property in Phoenix where she was raised, they're selling that one, I guess. It's an 11,000 square foot house, something like that. But Senator McCain and his wife, John McCain, who's worked so hard all of his life in doing what? Oh, yeah, politics. I forgot. They're plunking down $4.66 million for a luxury condo in the high-end area of Phoenix. And they're selling their estate in North Central Phoenix, 11,000 square foot home on 2 acres, and then there's a condo in Arlington, Virginia, valued at $850,000, and there's a condo in La Jolla, California that the taxes weren't paid on, and then there's $700,000 for a 1,900 square foot 3-bedroom loft condo for his daughter. Yeah. 22-year-old Meghan McCain. So, who's calling who, an elitist here? Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, it's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hi, Kevin.
Let me correct you. It's not elitist. He's uppity. Okay.
Well, yeah, I think you're right. That's
uppity.
Better.
Okay, you know, that's just code.
Right, you are.
He is uppity, and they don't like it. They cannot, you know, if someone like Flavor Flav is running, then they can clown him, but... They have nothing on him.
Flavor Flav. I laughed when you mentioned his name.
Yeah, but he is uppity.
Yeah, I think, you know...
And that's the worst thing you can do in McCain's circle, to show you're just as human and just as good, if not better, than they are.
Wow. You know, you make an excellent point. That is the word they'd like to use, isn't it?
Yeah.
They would love to. I wonder why they don't. I wonder why they just don't go ahead and say it.
The worst thing you can do to a bigot is remind them how much of a bigot they are.
Yeah. Well, I've tried to do that on every occasion on the program, every occasion that comes up. But for them to be out calling Barack Obama an elitist coming from them is, woo. It was ridiculous in the first place. He's not elitist.
You know, he is uppity.
He dare go out and show some confidence. And, you know,
he did goes out, get an education, and show some confidence and competence.
Yeah. Why, what a surprise that a man would do that. My goodness. I just, there are how many thousand Barack Obamas in this country, perhaps million, who knows, competent, highly educated and all that. They act like a surprise. I was reading an article. Are you familiar with Thomas Sowell?
No, not really.
Columnist. He's a black columnist, intellectual, very intellectual. He writes a column in the local paper here, but it's syndicated around the country. And Thomas Sowell, who has accused Barack Obama of being elitist, and you're right, using the code uppity. I just can't believe it. And sometimes, and what's his name? Armstrong Williams has said the same thing.
You know what? Armstrong Williams is a house nigger. He's a good old house nigger. And you know what? One thing I've heard a skinhead say is that a well-placed Uncle Tom can do the work of a thousand clans. And that's Armstrong Williams.
Wow. Yeah, you know, he hasn't been real prevalent in this election so far, and I'm happy for that.
Good. But you have others like this cross-eyed dude on MSNBC.
Oh, isn't he a piece of work?
Yeah.
I can't think of his name. I can't think of his name. Yeah, he's really something. How can you get up day after day and sit there and recite the party line? I couldn't do that. Man, I really couldn't do it.
First of all, he needs to speak like he has up here. But, you know.
Yeah.
You know, but that's another thing altogether.
Yeah. But, so, how is it in New York today?
It's a beautiful day.
Beautiful day.
Yeah, beautiful day.
Have you been watching the Olympics?
No, I'm boycotting the Olympics.
You're boycotting them because?
Well, for the simple fact, you can get your liver taken out of you if you dare join a union in China, and, you know, I don't support slavery.
Okay.
And a couple other things.
I wonder if you're like a favorite to win a race or something, and you don't. Are you faced with that too?
Excuse me.
If you're supposed to win a gold medal in an event like they did in Iraq, I wonder if they get beaten afterwards or something.
Oh, they are the number one team, right?
Yeah, they are.
They're cleaning up on the medal.
Yeah. Yep, they're doing fine. I've watched some of it.
And you know, God bless them. You know. And for one part, I like the fact that the third world country now is saying, look, this is us, you know, people of color, but I don't like the way they're doing it.
Sure.
And this is their coming out party and saying, look, we're going to be a force to be reckoned with in the 21st century.
That is exactly what it is, and I think it's working very well for them from what I can see so far. They definitely are having a huge coming out party here. It was a wise decision for them to get in and do this.
They've... Well, it did wonders for Japan back in 64.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It has. All right. Hey, thanks for calling today. Good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you, brother.
Bye now.
Okay, bye.
Interesting comment about Armstrong Williams. yes. So here we have the... Hey, have you been keeping up on the war? On the what should we call it? The Georgia, the Russian invasion of Georgia, the Georgia, I'm goading you into invading us. Did you know? And let's talk a little bit about it. Did you know that the president of Georgia is he's either 39 or 40 years old. I'm not exactly sure which it is, but he's only 39 or 40 years old. And the youngest president, one of the youngest presidents in the world. But the New York Times had an article on him, and his name is Shakashvili. I don't know what it is with Shakashvili, with so many of the names over there. But he was educated here in this country. He has really thumbed his nose at Russia, and he has been good friends with Dick Cheney. Bush has told him not to worry, he's in their corner, and this is another time when the Americans have told a smaller country that don't worry, we're behind you, and then when worse come to worse, hey, you're on your own. That's pretty much it. Not that I think we should go pouncing on the Russians right now. But this fellow, and the way I see this, it's very complicated, but once again, it boils down to oil. I don't think there's any question of it that the Russians saw their chance. Mikhail Saakashvili. Wish they'd have just names like John Smith or something so we could. But he's been a splinter in the eye of the Russians for a long time. They've resented it. The Ossetia thing was coming. Georgia went in and caused a lot of problems in Ossetia. And the Russians didn't like it. The people are Russian. And found the excuse they needed to bring in troops. And that's basically the ins and outs of the whole thing. But it boils down to, take a look at the map. And I don't know how many of you have done this. You can Google a good map. But it's very interesting to see the oil from Azerbaijan. There's a pipeline built from the Caspian Sea and the high-output oil area of Azerbaijan. Pipeline built that goes through Azerbaijan and goes through Georgia and down through Turkey to carry as much as 1 million barrels per day of oil. And that is very important, and that's one of the reasons the United States has been over there showing these folks how to defend themselves, because that pipeline's important. And so now the Russians have bombed the port that it could have been diverted to in the Black Sea. The Kurds have bombed part of it in Turkey so that it can't go through there. So now the oil is being sent from the Baku area all the way up through, guess where? Russia. That's right. Russia now has control of where that oil is flowing. That is what this story is all about. The Azeri oil company, SOCAR, announced that it's halted exports from the two Georgian ports close to Supsa. And one of them was bombed by the Russian planes. So it's out of business for a long time. And there's this, I won't say the whole name of it, but it's called the BTC pipeline. And it's it carries oil up there as well. But the Russians have, for the time being, not necessarily taken the oil, but it's flowing through their area now and their pipelines in their country. So they are in control. And I don't know how soon it'll get back to being normal again. I just don't know. But, you know, here's the deal, really. Here's the deal. Here's what it boils down to. The U.S. isn't about to bail out the Georgians. I think everybody knows we can't do that. We can go talk to Medvedev. We can go talk to Putin. And it does look like Putin is indeed the one running the show there. But we're not going to bail out the Georgians, although we've said that we would, that these crazy warmongering neocons like Kagan and Crystal, they're talking real tough, these two clowns again. God, I hate it when I even see Bill Crystal on TV. And they're comparing Putin to Adolf Hitler. And the fact is that Bush enticed Saakashvili. But Bush was never serious about coming between Georgia and Russia on behalf of Georgia. He wasn't going to do it. And so, Bush's support for Georgia turns out to be worthless. Just like the rest of his pro-democracy rhetoric that he's talked about over here the past few years about pro-democracy. That's all it is. It's talk. And when it comes down to it, when you look at the whole situation, you look at the map and you see where the oil's flowing, where it's supposed to go, and our involvement there, basically Bush set up Saakashvili and Georgia. Anyone who was paying attention to what was going on in Russia and in that region realized that this sort of response from Putin was and Medvedev was possible and probable. If Saakashvili kept poking him in the eye, and that's exactly what he did when he started antagonizing the people in Ossetia. I'm not defending one side or the other here. I'm just telling you the reality of the situation. And so Bush blew it, as usual, when it comes to foreign policy. And speaking of foreign policy, does anybody have any idea if the State Department building in Washington, D.C. is still occupied? Are they still there? Are the phones still hooked up? Is the parking lot empty? Did they all go on vacation? Because sure as hell, our Secretary of State is AWOL. Here we've got a serious conflict taking place. We've got many serious things taking place in this world right now. And where has the Secretary of State been over the past few years? And where has the Secretary, where was the Secretary of State when the Israeli-Lebanese war broke out? Where was the Secretary of State when this thing broke out? And especially being mindful of the fact that this woman is a supposed expert on U.S.-Russian relations. She's an expert on Russia. That is supposedly why she was picked to be an advisor to the president before she was Secretary of State. Can someone tell me what, if anything, this woman has done as Secretary of State? Anything. It's befuddling to me, because I believe that next to the president, and sometimes more importantly than the president, we've got to have a great Secretary of State. And from what I can see, we've got no Secretary of State. I think Dick Cheney might have had her run out of town on a rail. I don't know. Dick Cheney's the one running the ship of state in this country, I believe. But I'm just fascinated. Fascinated that Secretary of State of the United States has not gone over when we're talking about, oh, they're our friends and this and that. We haven't done anything. This has been a presidency that has avoided diplomacy whenever and wherever they possibly could. And a military response? There are people such as the Kagans and Crystals talking about military response? I mean, that's absurd. That would mean a war with Russia. Would we really want a war with Russia in their backyard? I don't think so. Don't forget, they're still a nuclear power. Don't forget, they're still capable of launching nukes. Don't forget, they've got a powerful military, a very powerful military. And there are people in this country that would actually talk about going over and confronting them on their turf. Isn't that enough to declare somebody insane? Do you remember when Bush once looked into Putin's soul, told all of us, oh, I looked in his eyes and I saw his soul. And then we've got Cheney reportedly told Saakashvili personally that Russian aggression wouldn't go unanswered. What does he mean by that? But what is the answer? Bush and Cheney and the rest of these tough-talking warmongers certainly don't have the answer to it, all of which leaves Georgia at Russia's mercy, or maybe their lack of mercy. I don't know where they're going with this, and Saakashvili and the rest of us who desire any kind of a diplomatic resolution to it causes all to look elsewhere for some sort of leadership and some sort of statesmanship. I see Sarkozy from France has been over talking to him. But what has the Bush administration done about this? Other than sitting a couple seats down from Putin at the Olympics and talking back and forth a couple of times, what has he done about this? I'm amazed by this. I really am. A volatile area of the world. This area between Turkey and Russia. Not that far from the rest of the conflicts that are taking place over there right now. And, you know, an area between the Caspian and the Black Sea and these pipelines and all. Is that not worthy of sending the Secretary of State on the next plane over to talk to these folks? unless they know, unless the Bush administration knows that our word and our opinions on anything isn't worth squat in the world anymore. Is it such that the Secretary of the State of the United States doesn't have any sway, doesn't have any influence to do anything anywhere in the world? Is it that bad? Maybe it is. Maybe it is. Maybe it just would not matter to send them over there. But I ask again, and I mean it, is the State Department still open? I do have to wonder, because they just haven't done anything. Haven't done anything. We're going to pause for a break. Promised you that I'd play you some of this Hagee and Lieberman stuff. Here you go. It's a few minutes long, but I think you'll enjoy hearing two insane assholes talk about their opinions.
Because the hardcore Jews do not want what is presented to them now, they will get exactly what they deserve, and that's the Antichrist.
Not everyone believes the Bible to be the inspired word of God. So be it. But for us, there are only two ways to live, the Bible way and the wrong way.
Pastor John Hagee is back in the spotlight. 5 months after John McCain accepted the televangelist's endorsement.
I'm very honored by Pastor John Hagee's endorsement today.
And 2 months after he rejected it.
Crazy. Unacceptable. I would reject the endorsement.
It was remarkable that McCain courted Hagee in the first place, because the Texas preacher has never made a secret of his extreme views.
I believe the Antichrist is alive and well. I believe he knows who he is, and I believe he awaits with glee his day of demonic reign. This man is at least going to be partially Jewish, as was Adolf Hitler, as was Karl Marx. He will not regard the desire of women. That means he's going to be homosexual.
But more remarkable than Hagee's 3-month sojourn into presidential politics is his enduring political clout, even after his split with McCain.
We are still here. We are still alive. We are still growing. We are still going forward. By God's help, we always shall.
This week, thousands gathered in Washington, D.C. for the annual convention of the organization Hagee founded, Christians United for Israel. Among the attendees were some of Washington's best-known movers and shakers.
The bond that I feel with Pastor Hagee and each and every one of you is much stronger than that, and so I am proud to stand with you tonight.
Most of the conference was closed to the media with no advance notice. But in his one speech on the record, Hagee steered clear of theological issues that had earned him bad press in the past. Hagee's more moderate tone may have something to do with CUFI's contract with the public relations firm 5W, whose clients include Microsoft, Barnes & Noble, Harrah's Casinos, the rapper Snoop Dogg, and the actress and Playboy centerfold Pamela Anderson.
I said that I'm not opening up this, you know. So
we can't do interviews here?
I told them this already. No, this is not what it's for. The people aren't supposed to be bothered or interviewed. Simple as that.
David Brog is the executive director of Christians United for Israel, and another major reason for Hagee's staying power on the national political scene. Plus, he's Jewish, an important quality for Hagee's right-hand man, because Hagee, despite his fervent support for Israel, has long been accused of anti-Semitism. You see, Hagee's brand of theology, known as Christian Zionism, contends that the second coming of Jesus will occur only when Jews gain control of the Holy Land. When that happens, all those who are saved get to go to heaven, and everyone else, Muslims, Buddhists, Jews, and others, head for that other place.
What about the Antichrist? How does he play into...
He's a mystery. We're
not supposed to speculate on who he is or where he's coming from. We know he's coming from Rome, but we don't know who he is because the Bible predicts that the Holy Spirit will be taken out of the way and all the Christians will go up in the rapture. Then will that wicked one be revealed, the son of perdition or the son of destruction who opposes and exalts himself. So he's going to come in after the Christians are gone, move into the European Union, take it over, sign a peace agreement with Israel, pretend that he's their friend, then turn on them at the last minute and try to wipe them out.
A survey published the day before Hagee's conference found that 78% of American Jews believe Jewish groups should not partner with Hagee or other Christian Zionists. When Hagee's followers speak for themselves, it's easy to see why.
It's the split of the Jewish family into reasonable Jews and Messianic Jews, and that means the hardcore Jews are outnumbered in quality and quantity. Let them learn the hard way.
Okay. Remember when the days were wrong, rolling beneath the deep blue sky, didn't have a care in the world. Mother and daddy's heaven, but happily ever after fate, we've been poisoned by these fairy tales. Lawyers dwell on small details that had to fly. Oh, and I know a place where we can go, still untouched by me. Oh, we could sit and watch the clouds roll by, tall grass waves and wind. Oh, you can lay your head back on the ground, let your hair fall all around you. Offer up your best defense, for oh, this is the end. Oh, this is the end.
Back with you here on the Guy James Show today. Thank you for joining us. Good to have all of you along with us today. Have you been keeping track of the Olympics? Have you? I know some have, some haven't. I've watched some of it. I don't know how you feel about it. I was talking to a guy yesterday. I was lucky enough to have a dead battery in my car and ended up at the shop, and I'm sitting there talking to a guy that felt exactly the same way. I think sports like the gymnastics and all that are very nice. Synchronized swimming and all that, very nice. But I And I don't mind watching those. Don't get me wrong here. But anything that has to be judged by someone's opinion is not real exciting for me. I think, you know, I am one of those ones, run fastest, jump highest, you know, to do, throw the longest, all that, swim the fastest. I like those sports more than the ones where there's judging involved. I'm not crazy about judging, so. And who decided some of these things are Olympic sports? Who decided, no, maybe somebody, if you got kids that do this, you'll hate me for saying this. Those people that run around twirling those ribbons with sticks. I don't know what they call it. Synchronized something, I don't know what. But who decided that that was a sport? I don't know. Maybe I'm off the beaten path with all that, but there's some interesting things going on in the Olympics, and I've enjoyed some of it. The opening, oh my, that opening. That opening with all those drums and all that going on, wow. That was pretty impressive. Very, very, very impressive. I don't think I've ever seen anything on TV that was more impressive than that first, 15, 20 minutes of that thing with those drums. I mean, the whole thing was nice. But that deal with the drums really got me going. And evidently a lot of people did. It was all the talk at the water cooler this weekend and all. And I'll bet a lot of you enjoyed it too. 866-546-5254. I would love to hear from you. 866-546-5254. And we welcome you to join the program. We were talking briefly earlier about the Russia and the Georgia and Ossetia and Abkhazia and all that going on over there in the far corners of the earth, and watching some of the news accounts from Fred Kaplan and Bill Kristol and Krauthammer and people like that. You remember when Daddy Bush promised the Shias after Gulf War I that we'd help them out? And their desire to break away from Saddam, not to worry that we'd cover their asses. Uh-huh. You remember what happened after that? Mm-hmm. That didn't work out so well for the Shias, did it? But the thing is that the neocons have been using that terrible decision ever since to advance their agenda of grabbing control of all of the oil they can get their hands on all over the world. And make no mistake, that is what this is about. This is about world domination. This is about world domination of the resources. And this is about wealth. Resources mean wealth, and that means for a precious few in this earth, the friends of Dick Cheney and others. So now Dick Cheney and his neocon oil pals have told Saakashvili that they would defend him when push came to shove against the Russians, and when we find that we're not in any position to do that. And there's this big old oil pipe running right through the middle of that territory, and there isn't going to be a damn thing that we can do about keeping it open unless we want an armed conflict with Russia. And I don't think we want to go there right now, do we? I certainly don't want us to get involved in it. Now we've got Kagan, and we got Bill Kristol, and we got the rest of these war jackals that are screeching for war, that have been screeching for a war with Iran, and they originally started out with Iraq and Iran, and now they want a war with Russia. And that wouldn't be so bad, because who the hell are they? They're just talking heads, Kegel and Kristol and guys like Charles Krauthammer, with the exception of the fact that the administration has Kagan has the ear of the administration. They listen to him. Which I find, too strange for words. But the problem is, here we have a man running for the presidency of the United States, who has tipped his hands about his foreign policy, and John McCain, McNasty McCain, is right in there with these crazy guys, the Kristols and the Kagans and the Cheneys. He's right there with them, and people are still on this neocon bandwagon. And I would ask them the question, are they willing to have the world go down in flames because of their desire to rule the world and all of its resources? I believe that they are. I believe that they would chance it. I believe that if you gave these dangerous neocons, if you took maybe Bush out of the picture right now and a few others, in this administration, and you left it up to the Kagans and the Crystals and the Krauthammers and Dick Cheney and the likes of a John Bolton, crazy people, absolute crazy people, I believe you'd see a war with Russia in no time. I believe they'd go for it. I believe they'd push the button. They would. I believe that they are and have been and continue to be dangerous people. I believe McCain is dangerous because he's starting to mouth the very same views that these people have. He's a dangerous, dangerous man. And the first words out of his mouth are antagonistic toward Russia. He doesn't even think about diplomacy. Oh, no. Shoot his mouth off first. Never mention diplomacy. He says, oh, well, we're gonna tell these damn Russians what to... Uh-huh. Yeah, we sure are. And like I mentioned, with the present condition of our State Department, maybe there is no use. And as for Junior Bush assuming this holier-than-thou position and condemning the Russians for invading a sovereign nation, don't make me laugh. How could anybody take him seriously after what we've done? How could anyone take him seriously? Well, you can't just invade a sovereign nation like that. Oh, really? Seemed like I've heard people say that before. I think lots of us said that before, and we were told we were crazy. We were told we were un-American. We were told we were seditionists and all that. Now, weren't we? I'm shocked by, and I mentioned with our author friend earlier about the hubris of this administration. They're going to go tell Russia what they're going to do as if we were going to do anything about it. Russians know we can't do anything about it. They're not a country anymore who is all military and can't eat. They're not dependent on foreign food anymore. I mean, they import food just like we do, but they're not starving to death like millions of them were before. They've got an economy that's working okay. It's starting to work up to be a capitalistic society, and a lot of people are making money and making their way in Russia. I wouldn't exactly say they're prosperous, but I would say their nation on the whole now, they're not broke like they were. And they've still got a mighty powerful military. Mighty powerful. And they could do some serious damage to us and to a lot of people, and probably to NATO. The NATO forces. So I think Cheney and John McNasty McCain and the Crystals and the Krauthammers and the Kagans and all, they better shut their mouths about all this. They better work behind the scenes. The State Department better get busy behind the scenes and try and do something about it. Maybe they are. I hope they are. But nothing seems to be working right now, although Russians have said they're going to cease hostilities. They haven't exactly said cease hostilities, but they've said they're going to call a halt to the country's military operation in Georgia. He didn't say they're going to, Medvedev didn't say they're going to pull their troops out of Georgia. And he did mention they're still authorized to fire on enemies in South Ossetia. But they're no longer going on the offensive, evidently. So that's a good thing. Thousands of refugees gone from Ossetia into Russia. From what I understand, many hundreds killed. But there is some sort of a ceasefire going on right now. And I hope it holds, because we don't need another conflict like that going on in the country, and we certainly don't need John McCain running around shooting off his mouth about being Mr. Tough Guy again. You know, Mr. Tough Guy isn't getting it in this world anymore. back in the day of Nikita Khrushchev and Brezhnev and Kosygin and the Russians, then maybe a little tough talk was in order in those days. It's not working anymore. And we're not in a position where we're able to go around and bully anybody in this world anymore, anybody of any military importance whatsoever. They know it, and we know it. And what's more, I've truly believe that a huge majority of the American people don't want to get involved in another conflict. Hell, I believe even a lot of Republicans don't want to get involved in another conflict. Although many of them never saw a conflict they didn't want to get involved in. Because we're big, tough, bad Americans, by God, and whatever we say, we can whoop anybody's ass that we want to. We'll just, one of their favorite terms, we'll just glass them, right? We'll drop a nuke on them, we'll turn it, yeah, we'll show them. Unfortunately, that was the attitude of America for too many years. I don't think it gained us anything. Certainly didn't gain us any friends. A bully never has very many friends. A bully only has the friends that he's coerced into being his friends out of fear. And those aren't the kind of friends you need. And they aren't the kind of friends that we need as a country, as a nation. So I hope the Bush administration will take heed. Finally find the art of diplomacy, if they are capable of it in any way, shape, or form. Maybe there's somebody in the administration that's capable of some diplomacy. I haven't seen any yet. I haven't seen any decent diplomacy in this entire almost 8-year term of Junior Bush. I don't think he believes in diplomacy. And I think we can tell from the talk that we're hearing from John McCain right now that he doesn't believe in diplomacy either. And here's an ex-military guy who sees himself as some sort of a tough guy hero. Talking tough to people. We're going to do this and we're going to do that. And he wants to get Russia thrown out of NATO or whatever else he's trying to do. I think he better just shut his mouth. Just shut his mouth and not show any more of his ignorance. Because I don't care if he has gone over there and met with the Russians. He's gone over there and met with the Georgians. I don't care. He's not showing good judgment if he gets up and talks the way he has the last couple of days, and he should just keep his mouth shut. Barack Obama has commented on this, that we need to talk. Talking's the only thing that's gonna work in this situation. You just don't go out and start talking tough right off the bat. You just don't. Well, where are we at here on our schedule for the show? We're gonna take a quick break and we'll be right back.
And don't criticize that you can't understand.
Ah, yes, the times are a-changing. That's a fact. The question is, what direction are the times going? Are they going up or are they going down? Are we going to return to greatness as a nation? Ah, yes, I can hear the right-wingers. What do you mean return to greatness for a nation? We are a great nation. Hey, we're not the great nation we were. I don't care how you cut it. We are not the great nation we were once upon a time. We have had our military shredded. We've had the national psyche destroyed. We've got an economy that's in shambles. And I've heard that line lately. Well, we're the greatest nation on earth, blah, 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 blah. Well, we're not what we were. We have lost ground. And we've got to get back to that point. And I think we will, with the right leadership. We don't know. God knows we don't have the right leadership now. And God knows that we don't have the right leadership running on the right. And we're just going to, if you're unsure about Obama, we're just going to have to find out. But better to take a chance on somebody that you don't think you know enough about. Maybe you don't agree with all of his policy, but isn't it better to take a chance on somebody like that, that you're not entirely sure of, than somebody that you know all about? You know everything there is to know about John McCain. You know about his past life. You know about his militarism. You know about him being one of the Keating Five. You know about the way he treated his wife when he came back. You know about his actions in Congress. John, there's nothing unknown about John McCain. He's been thoroughly vetted, and what we see, I don't like. And I don't think a lot of American people either. But don't look at Barack Obama, somebody, well, he's untested. We don't know. He doesn't have the experience. I'll take my chances. I'll take my chances with a new inexperienced pitcher out of the minors that with great promise that we don't know yet if he's going to be great. But I'll take my chances with a guy like that than what I would some old rag arm pitcher that's seen his better days. Any day. Experience doesn't translate into great leadership. Most certainly not. It can. But it has not in the case of John McCain. He's not leadership material. He's not shown leadership whatsoever in the United States Senate. He's not shown any real leadership in his entire life. So, don't make the mistake of saying the young guy doesn't have the experience, the young guy doesn't have what it takes. You don't know. He shows me plenty. He shows me plenty of what we call in my day moxie. The guy's got it. He's got what it takes to be a leader. He is a leader. And he can inspire the American people, and God knows we certainly need that right now. John McCain couldn't inspire anybody. You can see it. You can see it when he goes out and talks. He's not inspirational to anybody. No, inspiration isn't enough. Well, we need some inspiration right now. We've had 8 years of dead leadership, almost 8 years of dead leadership in this country, and we need a new, young guy, inspirational, charismatic leader, and intelligence. And Barack Obama has got every bit of that. For you undecideds, take a chance. Take the chance. I don't think it's much of a chance. I think he's going to end up being a great leader. I really do. Just give him the chance. Thanks for listening to the Guy James Show today. Always a pleasure having you along with us. Proud member of the Head On Radio Network.